Hello, Radio Wisła. It is a great pleasure to host today in our studio a correspondent of Radio Wisła who recently visited Poland, Warsaw, and the Poland Museum of the History of Polish Jews, Ms. Wanda Mikołowska-Solomon. Wanda, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure hosting you here, and it's a pleasure to have that conversation with you about such a phenomenal event that took place recently in Poland, the history of the Museum of History of the Polish Jews. So, you went to Warsaw, made some arrangements, and I understand you also spent some time and discussed issues with the director of the museum, Professor Dariusz Stoła. But first of all, let's talk about the museum in general. What do you think that would do?
Yes, Leszek. I have been in Krakow for different events at the Galicji Museum and have been very fortunate over the last 5 years to keep abreast of the progress of the new museum in Warsaw, to learn that it has been a dream for almost 20 years. So
the dream's come true.
The dream has come true, and in actually standing in front of the museum, it was a highly emotional experience. This is in Willy Brandt Square. It's the museum is on the site of the Warsaw Ghetto. The building at first impression is overwhelmingly beautiful because it's all glass. And it was quite early in the morning that a friend of mine and I stood by the Jan Karski statue and anticipated entering the museum. The exterior includes pieces of glass that read Poland, the concept being that the legendary statement is that the Jews thought they heard the Hebrew in the word Poland of to rest here, come and rest here. So each panel has Poland written on it, and it's very effective. We entered the museum.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because we're standing in front of the museum,
yes.
And we know it's almost, you know, it's over 1,000 years of history. And with what expectations one may enter such a building? I mean, how do you convey such a long period of time with a museum or exhibit or otherwise? Yeah. So
yes,
what happens when you on the outside and as you enter this building and then what?
Well, I happen to be visiting with someone whose husband was an architect. I was fortunate to learn from her. The exciting part of the building is not necessarily the exterior, but as you walk into the building. It's like no other building in that it's alive, it's womb-like, and you find yourself just entering into something that is very living architecturally, and it affects you. You really have to stand and reflect and ask yourself,
did it speak
why?
To you?
It speaks to your heart because the architecture is so unique. The architect was a Finnish architect, Rainer Malamäki. It was a great competition, and people are very satisfied with the museum and its absolute beauty.
So your impression, first impression, is very satisfactory. It's overwhelming, I would say, isn't it?
Yes. And I recognized immediately that responding to the architecture was going to be a challenge. It's so stimulating that you find yourself not being blasé, but wishing to understand what the message is. And of course, we know the message, that this is a place that is alive. It is not, the museum is not a Holocaust museum. It represents 1,000 years of Polish Jewish history. That's a big undertaking.
It is, yes. So how does one convey, portrays, tells the story of 1,000 years of common history? How is it done?
My understanding was that it was a tremendous challenge. It was primarily the Historical Institute of Poland that made the final decision on what periods of history should be covered and how to do it. I have to point out, this was another challenge, there are 250 computers involved in the exhibition, but it's all done in a very new style. It's narrative. There are no traditional exhibits. I think the only thing that is concrete, there's a Polish coin, a very old coin, an antique coin, and also included a book that's 400 years old. Those are the only two concrete pieces in the entire core exhibit, which has 8 galleries.
So most of the exhibits in the museum are virtual.
Yes.
Very interesting. So what is the feeling? How does time, can you convey time? Can you get the appreciation of the time past all these years and centuries in an electronic age? How does it happen?
That's a good question. What overwhelmed me was the very first exhibit, which is entitled Forest. How it was conveyed was in this manner, that there were panels extended from the ceiling down with paintings of trees. So it was extremely poetic. There was the indication that this was the forest that the Jews first came to when they left, be it Spain or Portugal. And that was very effective. And then the second exhibit, as one moved along, was an absolutely impressive reproduction of a synagogue from 17th century Ukraine. Right page here. Gvozdzic.
Gvozdzic, oh yes.
Yes.
Right. So the synagogue of Gvozdzic.
And it was extraordinary. Some people had followed its development in the New York Times. There were 400 volunteers who created the ceiling, the reproduction. And I had the privilege in Krakow last summer of meeting Irena Plentka, whose family foundation provided the means for this exhibit. And I love what she said, and it's quoted in many of the brochures, that the synagogue makes Jews very proud of their history. And at this point, she felt that it was essential that Poles and Jews alike really understand the cultural contribution.
Is this the synagogue
of the Jews?
The Jewish town?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
This is the exhibit we're looking at, the one of the guides that we have here, the brochures, right?
Right, and then you move on.
Could you describe that synagogue to us?
Well, these are very, very beautiful paintings that were reproduced. And you have paintings of various animals and various designs. It's a beautiful piece of art.
So most of the paintings are
you look
on,
up to
on the ceilings.
Yes,
you have to look
yes,
up.
Okay? Yes.
Whereas the center is there's a support provided for the ceiling, right?
Mm-hmm,
for all
mm-hmm.
the paintings that are placed on the ceiling, and then around you have enough space to wander around and look at some other exhibits. Okay, but the overall impression is what?
Well, that exhibit takes up a lot of space, as you can see from mm-hmm. the brochure, and one is told when entering the museum that viewing these exhibits can take 2 to 3 hours. I went back 3 times the first day. None of the exhibits were open. We just got an overview of the museum. Then I went back to look at these 8 beautiful galleries. But other people have come and attended a variety of lectures that the museum gives. You could stay in Warsaw for a week being a student and being a viewer.
Or maybe a life.
Yes. And the exhibit covers the period from the medieval times. I see dates here, 960 to 1500. With a lot of emphasis on the political development of the Jews and their rulers. It then moves on to more explanation of the 100 communities and how they evolved throughout Poland, including a lot of emphasis on Vilnius, which was a spiritual center, and a lot of emphasis on Zamość, which had a great deal of activity. What was fascinating after you finished with the political part of the development of the Jews was focusing on a Jewish street, and
Do you remember the name of the street?
No, it's just called On the Jewish Street.
Okay.
And what it represents are shops and synagogue, church. You get the feeling that you are really in a Jewish town.
So that's part of the
one
Shtetl
part,
generated.
One part of the exhibit. And it's quite dramatic as you are understanding the culture of that time, which is about 1918 to 1939, before the war. All of a sudden, you enter into another gallery and you hear planes overhead to indicate the beginning of the war. And at that point, my friends agreed too, there was so much to see and so much to hear, and there were people whom we met on the tour who felt it was an awful lot to absorb, but fascinating. And even younger people expressed this, that there was so much to learn. And we focused on the war and the Holocaust, so many facts that made it quite a challenge. I've done a lot of reading over the years and study, and I couldn't help but wonder, how challenging it must be for someone who came to the museum for the first time. And I would advise people who, teachers in particular, to assign readings as much as they could.
I would start
over the
with
history
a visit.
Of Poland.
I would start with a visit.
That's
probably.
Yes, but
something that's going to be right now, or should be, on everyone's list. You're going to Warsaw, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see
Well, you're going to see a few things, but one of those is going to be the Warsaw Uprising Museum, and then the Museum of the History of Polish Jews.
Yes, it is absolutely a must.
Well, I'm glad we agree on it. Now, let me ask you about, you got a little bit lucky because your guide was no other but the director of the museum.
No, there was a young woman.
So you had a guide, and right?
Yes, we had a guide. And I learned halfway through the tour that she had studied with Anna Maria Olabakowska, who is a professor at the Jagiellonian University, whom I have interviewed. It should be on a tape somewhere, who Summers gives a wonderful course on the Jews of Poland. So this young girl was very knowledgeable. I thought she did a terrific job. No, I later met with Professor.
So could you tell us a little bit about the director of the museum, Professor Dariusz Stoła?
I have a very happy report on him. We met in his office to chat, and he was so happy. It was a pleasure to be with someone who had such positive things to say about his experiences. I believe that all the surveys that were done and all the reports just praise the museum. Mind you, it opened October 24th, and I was there in April. So he had many statistics. He told me there had been 150,000 visitors to date. They were expecting 500,000. The survey indicated that 98% loved the museum. And then something that I was always curious about, that have you ever heard of Daffodil Day in Poland, where students make daffodils for the Holocaust Remembrance Day? There were 30,000 daffodils given to the public.
That's remarkable.
Yes, this day.
No, that wasn't something we observed when I was in Poland.
Yes.
So
no,
it must be a new thing. No, I haven't heard of it. Yeah.
Well, I was very impressed by the professor. His scholarship is amazing. I think there was a lot of competition for the position. He's a historian with a renowned for his vision for the museum. His vision was impressive. I don't know specifically what that refers to, but his field is in migration. Mm-hmm. And so he must have a very deep understanding of the Jewish movement, you know, in this 1,000 years, its history. But I felt that having at that point gone through the exhibit and seen what it represented, it was trying to show the 100 communities and how all over Poland there was this movement, that they weren't just Jews in Galicia. The professor was educated at the Institute of Political Studies at the Polish Academy of Science. He's a fellow at the Warsaw University Center for Migration Research, and he was charming and warm. I really enjoyed talking with him, and on the tape, I don't know whether you hear it, he invites people from Radio Wisła to come to the museum, but he was one of the most happy people I've met in a long time, because for one thing, money was raised well for the museum. It was the Polish government donated, the city of Warsaw, and then leading Jewish philanthropists like Tadeusz Taubi and Rolat and Mrs. Plentka and her family foundation. There was a period, I can recall, I don't know the details, that where raising enough money was in question, but in the end...
For a lofty goal like this, you know, it's usually a matter of time, not whether, you know, they're going to have enough.
Yes. And it caught the museum, cost $100 million.
Right. It was an international endeavor.
Yes,
yeah.
And
but
many
Poland contributed most of the money, yeah.
So he was looking forward, which I found absolutely fascinating, to an upcoming event at the museum, which was
in addition
a symposium.
To, right, so in addition to regular exhibits that they have, they also have symposia,
they had
conferences,
a symposium scheduled for May.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what it included? At least 10 historians from the United States, Tufts, Sarah Lawrence, University of Pennsylvania, history professors from Poland, including a man whom I've never met and I've never read his work, but he is now the head historian, mm-hmm. Anthony Polonsky, from Brandeis University. So the conference was scheduled, and fortunately I got a hold of a brochure, and I don't think that historians could have delved any deeper historically in planning the dialogue. It was just amazing that on top of the opening and on top of having these wonderful events, and there are many for young people in particular, that they were doing this also.
So this is a very important institution. All of a sudden it's become during the, you know, it's hasn't been even a year since it's opened.
Yes.
And we've already witnessed several different major events taking place there, in addition to regular exhibits, in addition to 500,000 people coming to the museum. That must have some impact in the country and internationally.
Yes, I think that Professor Stilwell said a quarter of the visitors were foreign. I don't know if people are familiar with the Europejski Hotel. I used to stay there when I worked at the Kosciuszko Foundation. It is being refurbished. I believe that it will be one of the leading tourist hotels, as it has been for years, a very active hotel. No, I think Warsaw is expecting the museum to become very popular. Well, for one thing, people have visited the ghetto. They have visited the Fighters Memorial. They've gone to the old town. But this is something that is quite extraordinary. And I liked what I read from Dr. Polonsky, in which he states that the success of the museum is because it will be a place for scholars. And I guess that's very
And for
needed.
Everybody else.
And for everybody else, but that it will provide a center, and it covers the 1,000 years, which has not been done before.
Could you very briefly tell us about the 8 different exhibits or spaces in the museum? We've heard about the street, the Jewish street. We've heard about the forest, about the synagogue, right?
Okay.
I understand those are 1, 2, 3.
It's rather difficult because it is so busy. It's not your typical, do not go expecting to see the typical gallery where I'm thinking of the Met in New York or even SAM in Seattle, where you walk from room to room. It's created in a very novel way where you may be in one of the exhibits and turn around and you are facing a video of Ringelbaum, who I'm thinking of the period covering the Holocaust, was an archivist, and you are overwhelmed by information via a computer. Whether you want to remain and listen to the story is all questionable. I mean, where to put your attention? And the same is true of post-war. I mean, I'm not doing a good job, Legend.
Yes, you are. Yeah, this is wonderful. Look, the whole thing is so subjective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we as a radio do not shy from being subjective. How otherwise could we convey those feelings? They are yours, private,
yes.
Subjective. This is what you felt, and this is what you're telling. Yes. I think you're doing a wonderful job.
Well, I think I have to point out, too, that I'm an older person, and I mean, a computer can be overwhelming, and to think this
all
a narrative that is done in this style, it's, all high tech. As a matter of fact, the day that I met with the professor, the museum was closed. And guess why he was there? He was working with the computer people because they had glitches. So the officials of the museum, the director included, is finding it to be a challenge to...
So is the museum open 7 days a week?
Oh, that's a good question. I have a booklet here.
Well, we'll have to go to the website and check it out,
but
I guess.
I would think the website. Yeah. A little bit guilty. I haven't
because,
been
you know,
looking
at I would really hate tons of and go to the museum and only find that the door is closed.
No,
right?
No. Let me see. It was open on Monday, closed on Tuesday, but it might vary, like all museums. And there is nothing worse than being in the city and knocking on the
door. When
we
lived in Philadelphia,
yes.
5 or 6 times, we
yes.
went to see Kosciuszko Museum,
yes.
a tiny room where he lived,
mm-hmm.
6 Pine Street, in the old Philly. It was always closed,
mm-hmm.
so we never really got to see it, even though we lived
yes.
there.
Well, the day that two friends and I were visiting, we enjoyed going into the gift shop that was open. And it's just such a paradise for teenagers. I mean, I've never seen so many necklaces and little hats and pocketbooks. I couldn't quite understand, I'm a book lover, why there weren't more books. I think Steinman's book on, it's called The Cracked Mirror, The Crooked Mirror. Woman has written this book about her Jewish background and the reconciliation of Poles and Jews. And there was Polanski's book, but maybe they're just a little bit tardy. And
we're going to drop him a line and tell him, beef up on the,
yes.
on souvenirs, because
yes.
in addition to memories, people would also like to have something tangible.
Right.
I don't know how you can enclose 1,000 years of history in a capsule, in a museum, or in one's memory, but something that you can bring with you and touch and know it sits on your counter, on your table, or maybe in a drawer, and falls asleep. That's something will take you back to the place of today and also of yesterday.
I will agree with you. And I might add that on the day off, we went to the cafeteria. And I never thought my babcia was famous for anything but ponchki. Are the Poles famous for apple cake? I had the best apple cake.
Yeah,
and then the waitress
Wanda,
was so sweet, she put a big dollop of whipped cream on it. The food in the cafeteria was wonderful.
The main reason Polish people go back to Poland is because of jabłecznik, the apple cake.
The apple cake.
Right, there's no
I
other
was
reason.
Right.
Maybe for some, like people from Warszawa or Poznań, flaczki. But we have Flonsky at the Polish home. So
maybe it's the apple cake.
Must be Yumwich.
The food was good, and it was very, very satisfying. You know how we are in the States about
will you
foods
go back?
And chefs,
will
and
you?
And to think that someone had worked so hard to make the food part of the museum mm-hmm. spectacular. I'm not just talking about average. I mean, it was beautiful, interesting salad with a Polish touch. Don't ask me, but I knew I was in Warsaw.
Well,
I'm sorry.
We know something about the Polish touch at Radio Wisła, you know. Not much, but enough. Would you go back to the museum?
Oh, yes, I intend to go back this fall. I want to go and experience it again. And I love Warsaw. I must say, I've spent time there, but I found it, well, I won't go into this, but I found it a little bit difficult after spending much time academically in Krakow, you know, as a teacher and so on, in that I had to keep telling myself that this is a city that was destroyed.
Right.
And I was having a wonderful time, and then I felt guilty that I was having such a hard time. But I justified the disequilibrium every time I walked from the hotel up to the museum. I thought,
sweet is the time when you can balance it
yes.
with a little bit of guilt. Yeah, it's all right.
Mm.
As long as you don't have too much Yabwechnik.
I think the essence of it is that so many people, scholars and people like Barbara Kirschenbach Giblet, she is originally from NYU and has been acting curator. Now she's curator just of the exhibit. That they have devoted and done so much to create this very unique museum. And it's great that they're receiving accolades because people are so impressed. So I encourage everybody.
Next time you're in Warsaw, go and see
yes.
a museum.
Yes, and not to I'm not very good with the computer, but to hesitate checking on events that are going on. They have a 480-seated auditorium. There's always something going on. It isn't just
right.
an exhibit
yeah.
for people who are students or academics or just curious.
Yeah. We're going to have a link with this interview. We're going to have a link on our radio
mm-hmm.
Website to the museum so people can easily
wonderful.
Click on it and dwell up into it, just jump directly, you know, or dive directly into it. And in the information that is provided on the website, I visited a couple of times, and yes, it's really impressive. And I understand this is a process that will continue. Nothing is ever done finite. So,
well, I would hope that perhaps Radio Wisła could do a program from.
We're thinking about it. Maybe, you know, next time you in Warsaw, okay, maybe we get you wired, okay?
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And maybe you can get together with Professor Dariusz Stoa
yes.
Or somebody else and bring us an interview from that place.
Yes.
What do you think?
I would be overjoyed.
Right, that's terrific.
Until
then, okay, we'll have to rely on your word here. And I would like to thank you so much for taking your time and sharing your impressions with Radio Wisła, with our listeners. We hope that this is one of several, that's how I see it, this could be a series of events. And speaking of one of several, I would really like to ask our listeners, next time you're in Warsaw, if you manage to and if you're up to it, okay, it doesn't have to be. Why don't you record a couple of minutes with somebody or your impressions live when you're in a museum, and we put them up?
Wonderful.
So once again, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your impressions with us.
I enjoyed it. Great.
Dziękujemy bardzo.